Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
My beard is, it's timeless.
I'm easy.
Oh, Adam, you're so right.
He probably is today because he's got a bad habit of cutting the ball, slicing the ball. So he probably is. Well, right. Okay, Sheely stopped by. To everybody here, Lindsay found this in The Sun, okay? The Sun. Is this story believable? A breatharian mom and dad. Are you going with breatharian? I've never seen the word before. You want a different spin?
I don't know. No, I would imagine that's how you say it. I don't know a lot of these people in life, so.
I don't think they exist, but I'm going to go with it. A breatharian mom and dad of two have barely eaten for 9 years, and they live off the universe's energy. The husband and wife believe that food and water aren't necessary, and humans can be sustained solely by the energy of the universe. They have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. They have survived on little else besides a piece of fruit or vegetable broth just 3 times per week in the last 9 years. The woman, even during the pregnancy, didn't eat anything during the entire 9 months she carried the first child. The married couple of 9 years claim that their food-free lifestyle has improved their health, their emotional well-being, as well as, wait for it, I mean, I didn't see this coming, letting them spend money on traveling rather than the weekly groceries. Well, yeah, they're not spending anything on weekly groceries. I mean, one slice of mango and a little bit of broth. Okay, Dan, you can see them here. They appear to be healthy.
Yeah, they look perfectly
healthy. You know,
healthy.
They're thin. They're not
emaciated.
No,
at all.
They're not like you're waiting for a medical community to step in. You first, Dan. Likelihood this is a true story and that we can survive on the universe's energy, and you can give birth to a healthy child if you don't eat a thing during the 9 months of your pregnancy.
I'm going to say on a scale of 1 to 10, negative 574.
Kyle?
I usually believe in people, so I'm going to go.
Sure.
Wait, hello?
New sure. Kyle.
I mean, there's nobody that finds the glimmer of hope, the ray of sunshine, that silver lining. Then miss. What's your middle name?
Ray. Kyle Ray Sheely.
Ray, I didn't see that coming. Anybody see that? Lindsay, see that coming?
R-E-A. After my great-grandfather, Ray Wolfram, fresh off the boat.
I was guessing. It had to be something unique.
Yes. And I, as somebody who sustains himself off the positivity of the universal life force, I'm in.
I think I need a drink after all that.
Laura had no idea what you were talking about and just choked coming through. Did like a spit take coming through the door.
Among the texts, there are a number of documentaries about this. Thousands of people across the U.S. reportedly do this. You live off the universe's energy. You have barely a piece of fruit and a small amount of broth, and you don't eat during 9 months of pregnancy. I know, as noted philosopher Kevin Garnett once said, anything is possible. But really?
Yeah, when they
medically, you can survive?
When they describe how it works, it's like, for the first 7 days, you only eat air. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go get some bacon and eggs across the street.
Yeah.
But before the texts start coming, granted, yes, she says she didn't eat during her pregnancy. If you read further down, they say that they let their children eat whatever they want and in hopes that someday they'll adopt this breatharian lifestyle. But can you imagine? You're not eating. You're surviving on the Earth's energy. And your kids are getting Happy Meals at McDonald's.
Yeah, I mean, how about if you want to go out with friends? You know, they order a drink, they order some food.
You just smell it? Is that it?
You're just opening up your arms, letting that energy come in, then you go, whew, I'm full. I gotta bring my arms together. I've had too much energy, Kyle. Too much.
I'm going no way.
No chance.
Just look at people that don't eat.
Yes.
You know what they look like.
They perish.
Yes.
And it looks like a devastatingly painful way to go. Laura Oakes is here right now with the news. I believe the gentleman's name is Donald Trump. He is the president of the United States. He's in Miami right now. Just finished a speech where he made some significant changes on the policy that President Obama changed regarding Cuba. He is down there. He was introduced by Senator Rubio. I know the vice president is there. The governor of Florida is there. And part of the president's quote was, I'm canceling Obama's deal with Cuba. And it's very interesting. I heard Steve Simpson make this point a little bit. The kind of the cross-section politically of views on our policy with Cuba. Because this isn't one where you just know where the Democrats are, or just know where the Republicans are. Some of it is age-related, it seems to me, that more of the younger individuals, especially if they're affected by it in some way, are saying, we've tried this for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. Engagement has a better chance than just the isolation because now we're down to just Raul, that the Castros have stayed in power and they find a way to prosper, but the rest of the country does not. Heinze led a trip to Cuba. I know multiple other people who have traveled down there. So I would lean, in my view, Dan and Lindsay, to changes. And I'm just being honest. I'd listen more to others who are trying to make the argument, did President Obama move too far? I know they've worked together on even some cyber hacking situations. So this is one, though. This is a policy that the president, when he was candidate Trump, did say he was going to change. And he lived up to it today. So enforce the Cuba embargo, tourism ban. Although, didn't I hear earlier, too, that part of the tourism ban, it's the individual tourism ban, but there's some group travel that is still allowed because one of the graphics points out Trump bans most tourist travel to Cuba. That's a little odd to me.
It does seem odd that you would do that. Although, you know, he's got to walk a fine line, too, because there's plenty of American businesses that have invested in tourism to Cuba at this point.
No doubt.
So if he's going to be pro-jobs, pro-business, and he's going to shut that down, that doesn't, you know, really equate, right?
No, it does not.
Which doesn't mean he can't do it, and, you know, he shouldn't make, you know, whatever decision he thinks is best, but but it's more complicated than just is Cuba good or is Cuba bad.
And, right, and when so much of this is America first through the economy,
right,
this is one way economically. And let me give you another split. As someone who spent a decent amount of time in Florida, there's a huge split in Florida, right?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you're right, age-based, definitely a part of the split. Constituency-based is a huge part of the split.
Yes.
You know? I mean, the communities, especially like you said, in Florida, that are heavy with Cuban refugees have no interest whatsoever in engaging with the
government. I'll tell you what, there is even a split in that. Because there are the individuals who were so oppressed, either they were able to flee in harrowing ways, and so they've seen it with their own eyes. But you read these stories, and I used to spend a decent amount of time in Miami, Fort Lauderdale area, and they would have a lot of just unbelievable, compelling stories where it would be like a father and a son or a grandfather and a son, and it would be a little bit, well, you didn't live it. And it would be, well, grandfather, I'm not trying to diminish anything. What you went through, but to try to get rid of these individuals, the more opportunities for those folks to see what the rest of the Western world is like and to allow more people to leave, that's the better way to go. When some of them say, are you kidding me? That what this person does, we cannot give the Castros any room at all. You know, and what is going to happen when Raul Castro either cedes power or, as some people believe, dies You know, how does it change? That is an interesting one. Let's do this. I'm going to pause here because I want to stay with the president on a few other items, including his tweets. Well, I mean, I'll get to one right now so we don't break right away. He has tweeted the Rasmussen poll, and the Rasmussen poll has him above 50%. That is the poll which has consistently been the most favorable to Donald Trump. And if you're going to say you don't believe in it, well, I think you're wrong because, well, no, you're not. It's obviously your own view. But for a lot of people, the Rasmussen poll has been a fairly reliable poll. And that's not to say all polls cannot be wrong. And I've heard some of the folks on the left ripping the Rasmussen poll. But you see a lot of people acknowledge the credibility of the poll. And it is interesting. You know, you look back at the election itself and what some people forget, even some people on this radio station, that the national polling of the lead Hillary had over Donald Trump right before it and how it turned out, almost right on. It really was barely off at the totality of it. It was just which states. He ends up winning Florida. He ends up winning North Carolina. He ends up winning Pennsylvania. He ends up winning Michigan. He ends up winning Wisconsin within those states. Some of those states were kind of were decisive. But then some of the states that she won were more decisive than expected. What is interesting is Rasmussen was favorable to him. The LA Times poll was fairly favorable to him. And in many areas, there are people who are open-minded enough, might lean one way or the other, but open-minded enough, who will give credit to those. So I wonder, you know, I mean, we have the debate here in this state too, Dan, where the Trib, when they poll, they're accused of, they lean to the left a couple points. And then the KSTP one is accused of being the right. Some of that, I think, is unfair because of the Hubbards and what ESPN 1500 was when it was KSTP and when it had Suchi Boy and had Jason Lewis, and it was more of a right-leaning radio station. Does that mean then their polling is going to be right? No, it does not. But, I mean, kind of the confluence of all these polls is interesting to watch.
But yeah, it does. Well, what it speaks to is people's distrust for these things, right? That they're so convinced that you can style the questions in a certain way to elicit certain answers, or that your sampling is going to be skewed based on the kind of answers you're looking to receive. And
yep.
The problem is all that data is out there generally with these polls. You can go and find, you know, what their sampling was and that kind of thing. People don't bother to do that because they'd rather just stick with their narrative and you know, say that's what it is and not have to worry about actually researching this stuff.
This is another example, too, of the president. When the story is favorable to him,
that was the other point I was going
to
make.
When the polling is favorable to him, isn't it funny, Lindsay, when it's not fake news? Because the president, you could go through his timeline over and over again, ripping polls, they don't matter, who cares? But two, his enormous social media followers today, and it's a huge group. He talked about 100 million. It's probably not 100 million because there's got to be duplication, but it's still a power base. I mean, there's no denying that. It's funny how all of a sudden this poll, because it's positive, it's got to be accurate. It's like the James Comey testimony last week.
The only parts he was telling the truth were the parts that favored the president.
Everything
else was a lie.
What he was saying, Mr. President, we're not investigating you. Well, that was an absolute accurate recounting of the conversation. When it was this other part, oh, Lindsay, he's lying. He's picking and choosing.
In fairness to the president, I think the majority of people like to promote the good stuff about them, but maybe not to the extent that he does.
Maybe not with the ferocity.
Well, and we were talking about this earlier, Steve Simpson and I. There's something to be said. We were talking about that tweet that was out.
Yeah, we're going to get to that next segment.
Okay, but just talking about the idea of accepting the fact that you are wrong with some grace and how that's something that you learn the older you get. And it's not easy. No one likes to admit they're wrong. It's not fun. But that there is some
there's some of that, but in the president is more vehement in that. I don't remember Barack Obama admitting he was wrong very often either.
No, but the difference, and I'm not arguing in favor of Obama, but the difference is that when one turns out to be wrong and they just drop it and don't ever mention it, don't call attention to it, versus the other one standing up, knowing dead well that they're wrong and just defiantly saying, no, I'm not.
That's, listen.
And if you say I am, it's fake news.
That's probably the top of my list of the problems I have with the president. He won. Yeah. I never bought into that. I thought it was insulting that some of the congressional Democrats did not show up. But the president throughout the campaign and as president, there are times when it's without an argument, a demonstrable falsehood. And he just continues to push it. Yeah. And I get that he was a great, successful real estate guy. And that was a part of the haggling back and forth. But that's different when literally you're looking the truth right in the eye and just toss it aside. And because so many of his voters want to believe and don't buy in the Washington swamp, they accept it. Let me get to his tweet earlier about the deputy attorney general, his acknowledgement that he is under investigation for obstruction of justice, because it's pretty interesting how that has played out. We'll get to that when we come back. Don't forget, we'll talk golf. Gary Van Sickle from Erin Hills. We're in the middle of round number two of the U.S. Open. The president earlier in the day through a tweet said, I'm being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me to fire the FBI director. Witch hunt. So then we're going to try to do this thing called facts. Because if you remember that week when the news did break, it was later, I think maybe on a Tuesday or so, the White House explained that the president had fired James Comey, solely on the recommendation of the deputy attorney general. When Rod Rosenstein had criticized the handling investigation into Hillary Clinton. Now, it caused all of us to chuckle that, you know, Donald Trump was going to fire James Comey because he wasn't happy with that Hillary wasn't treated fair enough. I mean, I believe that as much as I believe that the folks are living through the universe, just energy and no food. So, I mean, this was the narrative that the next day when it was stunning, right, that the president is firing the guy who's investigating him. And some people said, wait a second, Democrats, you're hypocrites. You kept criticizing Comey. And there was some hypocrisy, no doubt. But you still had a central back to, here we have an investigation, and you might think it's a witch hunt. You might think it's nothing there. And there has been, let's be clear again, no direct evidence tying the president or top people in the campaign towards collusion with Russia. President loses a lot of credibility when he acts like there's nothing there, when 17, all of them, every single one, intelligence agencies have said it was Russia. Every politician in Washington has acknowledged this, but the president feels like this takes away credit from his victory. So this is all during that week. Then the president has the interview with Lester Holt. Remember the interview with Lester Holt? Where that comes out on Thursday. And the president said himself, he would have dismissed James Comey, whatever the deputy attorney general had to say. So let's be clear. The president said it didn't matter what Rosenstein had said in the letter. I was going to fire him. Showboat. Lost confidence in many in the bureau. The Russia thing is nothing. So again, that's from the president himself. I think that's the last interview, one-on-one interview, the president has been a part of. And that was, how long ago was that? Can we check when that Lester Holt interview was? He's answered a few questions during events like last week with the Romanian president. So when the president today says, I am being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me to fire the FBI director, witch hunt, that is, according to the president's own words, 100% a lie. When was the Lester interview?
May 11th.
May 11th. So 5 weeks, right? He's actually answered more questions than Obama, though. And I don't think it's close. So can we just be clear on this one? You may think it's a witch hunt. You may think the deputy attorney general, and by the way, he's talking about how he might have to recuse himself now because of this. Now he might be a witness in all this. But if the president is going to say, my call, I did this, I decided this. The buck stops here. This had nothing to do with the deputy attorney general. Then don't look at this as anything but a man who feels like he's taking way too much heat in this when he says, I'm being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me, the FBI director, when his only quote in this is to say it didn't matter what the deputy attorney general had to say. He is our guy for the golf majors and has been for a long, long time. I think the first time we talked to him, he was covering Jones at Interlaken, going for the Grand Slam. He doesn't age. He's with us from Erin Hills in Wisconsin, not too far from us. Gary Van Sickle. Okay, I know you're dabbling all over the place right now. Outside of at Gary Van Sickle, where are the best places to take a look at what you're offering up through the printed word?
I'm writing for morningread.com. You can go there and sign up, and it gets emailed to you normally Monday through Friday, but we during the majors we go 7 days. So
nice.
There's two main stories normally, and then a bunch of little nut sentences of what's going on. So it's a 6 or 8 minute way to read about golf, and we have two new stories every day. And then we just launched a new website Wednesday called Where to Golf Next.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like golf course reviews and places to play, and we don't do this highfalutin architecture. What are the shot values here? We use the fun meter. If it's fun to play, I wrote a couple stories. One was about the Milwaukee County being the best municipal golf system in America by a mile, but I wrote one that hasn't run yet about I played a nine on my way here. After driving for 9 hours from Pittsburgh, I jumped out of my car in Kenosha and played a 9-hole municipal course there. That was, par 34, and I had a blast. So we want to write about
it's a good way to do it.
Places the average guy can play, and if a course is lousy, we're probably not going to write about it. But if we have fun, Clover. To me, Clover, I'm okay with Clover. It's still green. I'm not a snob on country club conditions. I will, as I said in the story that hasn't run yet, I have two main criteria, Chad, of courses I want to play. One, the parking lot has one or fewer cars in it, and two, the first tee is open. I'll waive one if I can have two.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
We all have one goal in golf. We just want to play unimpeded. That's all we want.
Well,
our goal in life. I want to go to the gas station. I want to go to the convenience store. I don't want to stand in line. I just want to live life unimpeded. So that's a T-shirt slogan or something. Unimpede me or something. I don't know.
The way I played yesterday, here's my one goal with golf. I want people to take all my clubs from me, so I never torture myself. But I'll probably play again in 3 days. It's just I can't stop. Okay, so let's.
Well, it's fun to be outside and
it was a beautiful day.
Even though you fail miserably, but maybe next time.
This is the state where you grew up. Okay, Wisconsin. How has this all happened that we have Whistling Straits, now we have Erin Hills, Sand Valley in the next 10 years is going to add four more courses. How has Wisconsin become this golf mecca?
I got one word for you, rich guys.
Yeah.
Herb Kohler was a rich guy, and decided to add, he wanted something to go with the, he owned the American Club, which is a 5-star resort in Kohler, and home which makes all the bathroom facilities, and he wanted something with it, so he built one course and then decided to really have a golf resort. You need critical mass, and he built two 36 holes of Black Wolf Run, the Irish course, and Whistling Straits.
Yep.
So that happened, and then there was this guy down here who made a bunch of money in greeting cards and gifts, Bob Lang, and he found this piece of property out here in west of Milwaukee that he just fell in love with, and he wanted to make it into a golf course that could hold the U.S. Open. And he kind of spent his money badly, went bust, and Andrew Ziegler, who runs a $50 billion hedge fund, saved the day, bought the course, and put the money in, and now we got the Open. And, Mike Kaiser, another rich guy. He's the guy who he made a bunch of money in, I think it was greeting cards and calendars. He's from Chicago. He went out and had a nationwide search, and he found a little place called Bandon, Oregon, And he built one course out there and then led to another. And Bandon Dunes is now synonymous. If you're a golfer and you haven't been to Bandon Dunes, then I guess you're not much of a golfer or you're just broke because it is pricey. But this is the Bandon Dunes is like the new Pinehurst. It's a blast out there. And imagine Pinehurst if it had bluffs and ocean and stuff. I mean, so his guy, I wish we could have heard the phone call, but his guy called him and said, I know you said never to call you if there's not ocean or water involved, but I'm telling you, I found this thing in north central Wisconsin. It's got a ridge of sand. You would not believe it. You just at least come look at it. So he went and looked at it, and it's like, yeah, you're right. It's crazy. So Sand Valley, I played last fall. It's great because it's got these spectacular pine barrens and sand pits and stuff. But all the trouble is on the side, and you can go out there and not really hit it that well. It's a little on the easy side. It's genius. This is what golf should be. You can play fast, and you can avoid the trouble. Unlike
low maintenance.
The Pete Dye, Jack Nicklaus, Forest Curry School of Design. Sand Valley's a blast, and they have another one that's partway done, Mammoth Dunes. And as you said, how many more is he going to build? I don't think even he knows.
But, yeah.
It's near Rome, Wisconsin, and there's not much up there except jack pines and sand and stuff. So it's kind of exciting who thought Wisconsin was that kind of a golf destination? It's always had a lot of good public golf, but not like resort stuff. And now it does. So it's cool. Good for Wisconsin.
Gary Van Sickle with us, 44 past one. Okay, we're sitting here midway through the second round. Some guys have finished. A lot of the big players are going off the afternoon round. What is your sense how this golf course is holding up? Obviously, it's playing a little softer because of the rain. We had the discussion about the huge fairways, the fescue. Would they be in play? The number's going to be a little bit lower than expected. Are you fine with how it's playing so far?
Yeah, I think the USGA is not the evil geniuses they used to be, partly because I've said this on your show many times, none of these tournaments are golf tournaments anymore. They're all TV shows.
Yep.
And birdies and eagles and excitement makes better TV. But I think they're busy counting their $1 billion they got from Fox Sports to be worried about what the scores are anymore. Really, it's not about the courses in the US Open. I mean, it is, but it's really about how much room do you have to put up grandstands and luxury suites and what do you got for parking? And, it's a big footprint, they like to call it. And this place is 640-some acres. They got more room than any course has ever held a major. So people are wondering, the scores are low. Well, the green, you give these guys soft greens, it doesn't matter where you are. They're going to light it up. You see it at the PGA every year because it's usually in August and it's 90 degrees and they always have to water the greens to keep them alive, and the guys go crazy low. I mean, you saw it at Whistling Straits a few years ago.
Sure.
Jason Day shot 21 under, and I think he got to 22 under or something. So I don't have a problem with it. I'll be honest, I thought 63 would be in play yesterday. In the morning until about 11, there was absolutely no wind. Then it got a light wind up to like 15 miles an hour to make a difference. Kind of backed off later. And today you have a little bit light breeze, but it's not killer. So I have always said if these guys aren't shooting 10 under par in a tournament, you've either had some crazy weather or you've tricked your course up too much because they're that good. I mean, they're going to be able to reach at least two of the par fives. And, these guys are that good. They should shoot 3 or 4 under every day. So you're looking at, I don't think 4 under is unreasonable. And 4 times 4, that's 16 under. That's what these guys, look, they're hitting 320 and straight. How hard is
that game? And everybody's making a big deal. Not the main golf writers, but people get too hung up on 7,700. Gary, they could make 8,500. It's just how deep these guys can go. Let me get to the three guys who might be the three best players on the planet: Johnson, Day, McIlroy. They all stunk yesterday. I don't think Day or McIlroy did anything dramatic to get back in the tournament. They've all missed some time for various, very different reasons this year. Among those three, which one's disappointing performance surprises you most?
Well, Rory had not been playing, so I didn't really expect much from him. Dustin Johnson, you know, you kind of thought he would get it together, but, you know, he got out of the group too. I think Jason Day, who at Memorial talked about how he was getting close and he was really close. And I don't know what happened to him. You know, that's just bizarre. I mean, look, you got Zonder Shoffley, or I can't even say his name.
And, I don't know either.
You know, and Brian Harmon and some guy named Champ, and Jason Day can't play with keep up with those guys. You know, Jason Day can't keep up with William McGirt. So I would say Day, who, well, he's three over again today. So, I mean, he's way down the road.
He's done.
He and Rory are going to miss the cut for sure. Dustin Johnson's going to have to shoot like 60, shoot a good round today. I guess if Dustin shot 3 or 4 under today, that would sort of get him. He's going to have to shoot 4 under 2 days in a row if he wants to think about getting in contention. And, you know, I'm not sure that's good enough. But you just never know. You would think, I mean, it just shows you that it doesn't matter what you think going in. Got big wide fairways, really long course. The greens are soft. You would think a big hitter in bashing on the greens, they don't have super a lot of undulation. It's a remedial putter's week. This was made to order for Dustin Johnson and Adam Scott and a couple of these guys. And you know, if you don't got it yet that week, I guess you just don't got it.
So Fowler obviously has had success throughout his life. He's a great amateur, college. He hasn't won quite as much as people, I think, sometimes believe. But he had the year in 14 where he's in the top five. He's in the mix. He's good looking. He's got the orange. People like him. If he wins this week, what will he do that he hasn't done before when he's come close at the majors, including at Augusta? Early in the year, what has held him back?
Well, I think it's been a little bit of putting, a little bit of chipping, you know, and I think both those cases is mental. I thought the stuff, the Golf Channel had a great quote, I guess, which Harmon said it on Sky Sports yesterday, but he lit a fire under Ricky by saying, you know, do you want to be a Kardashian or do you want to be a pro golfer?
I like that.
It's easy to sit back and collect 30, 40, 50 million a year and look cool. And, you know, he's doing all these commercials with the insurance company and everybody. I mean, he's
right.
raking it.
Yeah, sure.
He's got the rake out. He's just raking it in.
Yeah.
And you can do that, and you got a great life. You don't ever have to do anything else. And or do you want to win majors? And, you know, I my story on morningread.com today was I likened it to 2 years ago when he won the Players. Had a great week. That was right when Sports Illustrated came out with its player poll, and his peers voted him the most overrated guy on tour. And he wasn't happy about that. And guess what? He went out and played like he was on a mission. And he won the Players with maybe the best 6 holes of golf anybody's ever had in the Players Championship at the end, the best finish. And then he showed up this week, and what is everybody talking about? Well, now that Sergio won the Masters, Ricky, you're the best player in the world who hasn't won a major. He wasn't happy about that, I don't think. And I think between that and Butch's comment, you know, he's a very laid-back guy. Maybe this guy just needs to have somebody kick him in the butt once in a while and get his attention. Because, you know, life is good. And you might kill yourself. And I think both of those things were factors in why he played well yesterday. I mean, he played almost as flawless a run as you can play in a U.S. Open. I don't care how easy the course was or wasn't playing. And he did get a break by going out early when there was zero wind. But, you know, he got it done. So, of course, we're a long ways from finishing this off. But, I mean, back to your point, if you look at who's he got to beat – well, the best players in golf have all taken themselves out of it.
Well, let me give you one name.
Who's he got to beat? Well, he's got to beat Paul Casey and Siwoo Kim. And
okay, that's the guy I was just going to mention. I got about 60 seconds left. Siwoo Kim. Normally at this point, the two of us would dismiss people. But how about this kid? He wins last year, 21. He wins the Players. Are we starting to see the emergence of guy who could be there on the big leaderboards on a regular basis? Because some people say, well, it was a fluke when he won the Players. Well, he's through 36 right now at 500 and sitting in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, I guess he's not a fluke. I mean, somebody joked that he's going for back-to-back majors, which, you know, that's probably, be a headline on PGAtour.com. They'd love that. None of us, we know there's a language barrier there. None of us really know that much about him, but you can't, numbers don't lie. Maybe he's going to be a superstar. And, you know, this Tommy Fleetwood's a good player, too, from Europe. We don't know him very well here. But, you know, maybe the guys Fowler's got to beat are Paul Casey and Siwoo Kim and Tommy Fleetwood. And maybe, you know, maybe Mick Fleetwood, he could make a comeback. And Patrick Reed. I mean, But look at the other guys on the board. There aren't guys you expect to win majors.
No.
I mean, if Ricky can just do anything at all, I mean, he's halfway to having this thing locked up. It's big.
It's a great
the guys
chance.
You're afraid of are all, you know, are all basically out of it. It's amazing. And part of winning a major is being in the right place at the right time.
Correct.
You know, and that's, he may be in the right place at the right time this week. You know, and unless, you know, Kim Kardashian comes out, and maybe he won't be.
Great stuff as always. Enjoy it. We'll talk soon and drive safe when you're headed back.
Thank you, Chad. Talk to you later.
Gary Van Sickle, morning read. He's so good with us and has been for years and years. 52 past one, Lindus Construction time check. Time to install the last roof you'll ever need with GAF asphalt shingles. So let's pick up on what Heinze said on the Amazon deal to buy Whole Foods. $13.4 billion, that's Dan Cook money. So Whole Foods is taking a lot of heat of late. They've had some issues. I think the product you get at Whole Foods is very good. I don't shop there very often in many ways, Dan, because it lives up to the cliche, the nickname.
Whole paycheck.
Whole paycheck. Right? It lives up to that.
Yeah.
And you got to decide. And in this town here, if you're listening to us in the metro area, there are endless number of grocery store options. It just doesn't stop. I mean, the two of us better come up with a grocery store option right now. You know, you think about a while back, it was like Cub, Rainbow, and Byerly's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, you know, Rainbow.
Now I have a Cub, a Byerly's, and a Whole Foods within biking distance of my apartment.
Yeah. I live at a point where there are two Cubs within a mile of each other, and there's also an Aldi's, which would be a mile one way. There's a Lund's, and there's a Fresh Time. So that's all. I'm not exaggerating. Within about a three-mile area. And also, by the way, within that three-mile area is a Target with groceries. So within that, you know where I'm talking, Lindsay. Within that area, so that's six different grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know we like to eat a lot. And we had the obesity report. I guess we eat too much. But what's your margin situation when you have that
thin,
many
right?
competitors out there? And, yeah, Whole paycheck does live up to the reputation. And I just don't go there enough. But I'll say this, as a guy, I didn't start shopping in Lund's until about 10 years ago. And I was about to bail on it. I was thinking it was too much. They now are offering you deals all of the time. They decided if we don't compete with some of the other ones that are price-wise a notch below us, we're gonna face trouble. I think the last couple of years they've adjusted significantly.
Well, I think it's interesting. We'll get coupons at home from Lund's and Byerly's for like a free dozen eggs and free pineapple or like discounted fruit. And it is. They're trying to get people in the door.
So it'll be good to kind of see how this plays out. I mean, Amazon, $13.4 billion. That's a staggering amount of money. Not as staggering, though, when you have $700 to $800 billion in annual sales. The other number that stood out to me, Dan, today when I saw about this, you know what Amazon spends in marketing? $7.2 billion in marketing. And Bezos is about to be the wealthiest person on the planet. Jeff, I like you. You want to hang out? You want to adopt me? You want to marry me? I'm available.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records. This is a national contest.